This is the time where a speaker will share their experience, strength, and hope for approximately 30 minutes.
Let's see. My name is Susan. I am a recovered compulsive overeater by the grace of God. I came into these rooms 14 years ago, and I'm going to share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I think what it was like before, I was always a compulsive overeater, but I always had a weird relationship with food. I always thought I had a sensitive stomach because I would throw up, not realizing that I was throwing up because I was eating vast amounts of food, even as, you know, a four-year-old child. So I really had a love-hate relationship with food. It was my friend, and it's been my foe. I was always really picky about certain food, and I mean, downright fearful of other food. If I smelled, this is a weird thing, but if I was walking by, you know, walking down the street and I smelled people's cooking, it would set me dry heaving on the, just, I was really weird about food. But I was also excited about food. I mean, I would just be so happy about going to a little kid birthday party and then, you know, throw up for hours afterward because I had eaten, you know, six pieces of cake. I thought it was normal if you went to Disneyland or to a carnival that you spent hours throwing up afterward because you ate so much food. I thought that was normal. And I think I had certain eating buddies, my cousins and people. My father was a big eater also. So I didn't think it was particularly strange, but I didn't see my friends eating like I did. I knew from a pretty early age that this was gonna catch up with me at some point. That my big appetite would catch up with me and I would be heavy. I wasn't for a long time until I went through puberty. But even before that, I was, you know, really little, well, like in fourth grade, and I would be watching Charlie's Angels. And, you know, I was in fourth grade. I didn't have any type of body yet, but I wanted to look like those girls. And so I would be doing sit-ups and crunches while watching it. And after it was over, I would take out my bike and go ride around the blocks, you know, and get in like at least a mile. And I mean, I was like 10. So there was already that need for to look different, to look better. I wanted that validation. And it also came from my family. My mother took diet pills. And so when I was in about fourth grade, I started stealing those and taking her diet pills so that I wouldn't eat all day. There were, you know, the things that the appetite suppressant, just the over-the-counter stuff that I would steal when I was like in sixth grade. There were things called figurines that were like these bars that you were supposed to have two as your meal replacement. Well, I would eat the whole box. I mean, you know, just I really inappropriate with food. I didn't understand. I had no parameter, no gauge. I ate until I was sick. I never really felt full. I was always hungry. And this lasted up until I came to a program. Once I went through puberty, I started getting a little heavy, a little chunky, and then I really started freaking out. So I would take the diet pills, steal the ones from my mom or the store, and I would just drink Tab. That's a blast from the past, one of the original diet sodas. And I would judge others at school as they ate their probably nutritious lunches while I had nothing but my Tab and diet pills. And then I discovered bulimia. And boy, I dabbled in that. I was never hardcore, but I certainly used it to my advantage. If I overate, it was easy to get rid of. And with my gag reflex, it was super easy to get rid of. So clearly in my younger years, there was just a really bad relationship with food. And I became aware that I had a bad self-image, and the only way that I felt comfortable was if you thought I looked good. And so I would do anything to look good, the over-exercising, the yo-yo dieting. And through my high school years, I did look pretty good. And I became obsessed with getting that reaction from you. If I went somewhere and people didn't comment on my appearance, that my body looked good, I was just devastated. And that would probably lead to a binge. I was totally, you know, I didn't care if you thought it was a good person or smart or funny. It was all what you thought about how I looked. It was very, very shallow. And I think that food, my constant consuming of food was filling that void, that God-sized hole in me. But I didn't realize that, of course, then. And then the withholding of food was sort of a punishment for my eating. So I was definitely troubled. When I got to be about 17 or 18, I didn't have access to my mother's diet pills anymore. I think she had stopped those. And the over-the-counter stuff just didn't work anymore. So enter illegal drugs. And where I grew up, cocaine was big, but it was really expensive. So that wasn't a normal occurrence. But there was this other thing called crystal meth that was like generic cocaine. And boy, you didn't want to eat for 3 or 4 days if you did that. And by the grace of God, I did not get addicted to that because, you know, I could have gone down a really bad path. But I did use that as an appetite suppressant, and it was really, really successful. The bad part was when you came down, you really did feel suicidal. So I did nip that in the bud. But there were other stimulants I could get, you know, just on the street, and they worked great, and I didn't eat, and people commented on how I looked. And then I would, I was broken because I assumed once I started getting heavier, when I went to college, I kind of took a backseat on the illegal drugs and just tried to, you know, focus on my studies, and I kind of gained a little weight. So it was at that point that I would just diet, just really, you know, count those calories and exercise. And my reward for when I lost all my weight was that I could, you know, go back to how I ate. That was that delusional thinking. Once I lose the weight, I can go back to how I was before. I mean, that's, you know, it's that insanity thing and just expecting different results and doing the exact same thing. I mean, it's totally crazy. So this is when in the period I was really, really just consumed with dieting, counting calories, over-exercising, and I would use events for my motivation, you know, a wedding coming up or a vacation, a reunion. And just for months leading up to that, I would, you know, count calories and portion control and exercise and control, control, control. This is the whole crux of it. I wanted to control how I was eating because I wanted to control things in my life. And I thought that I had willpower over this. And when I would binge, I didn't have willpower. I was a horrible person and I didn't deserve to live. But then I jumped back on that horse of dieting and exercising, and I was a good person again. And I mean, it sounds silly, and intellectually I know that's not the case, but there was that fractured, still God-sized hole in me that I was filling with diet pills, exercise, you know, just instead of looking at the crux of the problem, was that I'm, you know, a spiritually sick person. So I would, if I was in a fat phase, I would call in fat. I wouldn't go to weddings. I might spend hundreds of dollars on pills to lose the weight, diet food, a gym membership, hundreds of dollars in Spanx. I mean, whatever I could do to lose that weight. But if the day came and I didn't look, you know, positively svelte and fit, wasn't going. Didn't matter what it was, you know, a friend's wedding or a funeral. It didn't matter. I didn't look good. I mean, that's how shallow I was. And then I married my husband, and I was thin when I met him. I was kind of a heavy bride, which, you know, I look back in pictures and I'm not ashamed of that. I'm sad for how spiritually sick I was at that time. But I try and see that woman with love and kindness. And I really couldn't wait to be pregnant because I thought, ooh, I can eat whatever I want. And then the cruel irony was I had morning sickness for the first 9 months with, or 8.5 months with my first child. So that didn't work. And then after my pregnancy, I was about 40 pounds overweight. And so here I was back to, you know, I was a good mom for the most part.
Your first 10 minutes went by and now you're on your second.
That's fine. Thank you. So, you know, I even if I was heavy, I would still do swim lessons with my child, you know, the mommy and me things. And so I wasn't completely self-obsessed, but 90-10. So enter, you know, a child's birthday, got to get thin. So the yo-yo dieting and the over-exercising and not being present, really. You know, I would focus on the exercising and how I was going to look and counting those calories. And I'm sad that my kids saw me like that. My older children, my daughter didn't really. And I've made amends to them because you'll hear more about that in a few minutes. But, you know, I was just so consumed with, how can I get away with eating and still losing weight? Well, you know, I couldn't, but I would make requests of God, you know, just please let me be okay with this. And it wasn't let me be okay with me. It was let me be okay with either dieting and exercise or let me eat the food and be thin still. I mean, I made bets with God all the time. I really didn't have a good relationship with God at that time. I do now, and I'll talk more about that. So anyway, so we're coming to the crux of my problem and my bottom. It started when my daughter was about 2, and I was really binging. We lived in Ohio, and I would eat. I would go to a drive-thru, eat. Order food, eat it on the way to another drive-through, and do this all around. And then I wanted to lose the weight and crash diet, and I would lose it and then go back again and get heavy again. And then I heard about this Starlet's buying horse asthma medicine from China and getting really skinny from it. So I thought, that's the answer. So I ordered it, and there was some sort of snafu because it's an illegal drug coming from China, which and then was communist. And I had to go pick it up with my daughter on my hip at the post office. I'm literally breaking a federal law in the company of my toddler. And you think that'd be bottom, but it wasn't. I took the medicine. It did nothing for me except put me into early menopause, and I still got fat. And we moved back to Santa Barbara, and I gained probably 20 more pounds and knew that food was a problem. I knew that all my life, I knew that this was an issue, but I knew that I was using food as medication. I was medicating with it and medicating with the diets. So I was putting my child to bed and fantasizing about the binge that I would do that night. And my husband was my eating buddy. He was my eating buddy before we had kids. And then after we had kids, we would, you know, put the kids to bed. Instead of having a romantic night, we'd eat a pie and ice cream. So that was our romantic night. And so I was fantasizing as I was putting my son to bed, not about my husband, but about the food that I was going to eat. And my son was really excited about something. And I screamed, "Shut the fuck up," because I just wanted him to go to bed so that I could eat the food. And that was the bottom. I knew, you know, this isn't going to happen. I'm not going to do this. And at this point I knew about OA because my cousin had gone to a few meetings and we were really well versed with AA because that was big in my family. So I knew about it and I looked up a meeting and I went to a meeting on a Sunday at the Unity Church and everybody said what was in my head. I had never, ever been around people who thought the way I thought. And I felt at home. I had never felt at home anywhere. I had always felt like I had been on the outside. And I finally felt like I belonged. And now before this, I have 3 kids and a husband and a full life. And I've felt completely alone in my life. And now I have OA. And I go to these meetings and you all say what I feel. And I know you intimately, and I don't even know your last name. I mean, it's the craziest thing. And I've never felt more at home. I've never felt like I belong, except for at OA. And now I'm in a subsequent 12-step meeting, because you know the old adage, if you're not in at least two 12-step meetings, you're in denial. So, and that's part of it. Just, I mean, growing and evolving as an abstinent person, being an optimal Susan, I've realized, you know, there are other paths that I need to go. But that's the beauty, is I'm never going to leave OA. I, with every diet I ever went on and would lose the weight, and people, "Oh my God, you look so great. You look so horrible before." And people said that, "Oh my God, you're like half the person you were before." Well, thank you. And so even every time that happened before, when people, you look so great, I always knew, God, you know, I've got to, I'm going to lose it. I'm going to lose it. I'm going to go back to being fat. And now I never have to do that. I never have to leave. I'm never going to graduate or be finished with a diet. I will be in OA for the rest of my life. And I am so content and happy. I finally am home. It was the last house on the block for me, but it was the last house. And I'm going to stay here and live here forever and ever and ever. How I work my program and what my life is like now. Before I was completely obsessed with food. Now, by the grace of God, I've been relieved of the obsession of food. I have been abstinent from sugar for almost 14 years now. I'm in the 14th year. And that's just, I mean, that never would have happened. I was really lucky that I knew that that was a trigger for me. That if I ate sugar, I would just eat everything for the rest of the day. And, you know, it got to the point just before I came into program that I couldn't stop eating anymore, that there weren't any periods of diet anymore. It was just constant eating. I mean, I took pills and I went to all those weigh-in pays and still just kept gaining weight and lying to them. You know, well, I took the pills and, you know, I didn't have my food because of a fire. It just lies. But now I live a very honest life full of integrity and it's working the steps. Oh my God. When I first came in and I heard about the steps and I thought, There's no way I'm doing that. I will never. First of all, I'm not powerless. I have all the power in the world. I could stop eating and lose weight. Well, no, I couldn't. And that was all that denial. And so now I work the steps in all my affairs, which, and when you first start, you start one and it leads you to two and three and you're ready. By the time eight, oh my God, I thought there's no way I'm ever doing eight, nine. Well, you know, four, five, six, and seven totally got me ready for eight, nine. And now I work the steps. I work the steps with a sponsor at least three times a year. I've worked them every way. I've worked them out of the OA 12 and 12.
Susan, yes. Rick, last 10.
Thank you. Thank you. I've worked them big book way many times. I've done special big book studies. I do them all different kinds of ways. And I'm just getting ready to start again the big book way with my sponsor. So I have a sponsor. I speak to her at least once a week. I send her my 10 steps. And then I also have 10 steps that I send to other people. I sponsor. And every morning I wake up, I pray and meditate. I exercise, but I don't exercise crazily anymore. And that I've had to give over to God. I commit my food. Every day I follow a food plan. My food plan has changed. I've had to add things as I've gotten older. The road does narrow. And, you know, sugar is my trigger for sure, but I could compulsively overeat celery. Doesn't matter. So I've really had to, I have to be really transparent about what I eat and commit my food. And I eat pretty much the same thing every day. And I like it that way. It's delicious. It's nourishing. Food is not my friend anymore. And it's not my foe. It's my fuel. I like my food, but I'm not obsessed by it anymore. It doesn't dictate how my day is going to be, which before it totally did. I do the steps every day when I have something going on. I'll work steps around it. I use my tools and I pray and meditate every morning. Like I said, it depends. If I've got a lot of stress going on in my life, I'll try and meditate twice a day. And I pray throughout the day. I mean, a lot of times if it works, something's going on, I excuse myself to the bathroom and hit my knees. I try and go to three meetings a week. I do a lot of Vision for You meetings just because I like the early morning stuff. It works for me. And then I have a set meeting I go to on Sundays in another program also. And then I fill in there. Sometimes it has to be podcasts because I'm busy. But I don't make excuses anymore. I'm too busy. I can't do this. You know, that was part of my issue, was that I was a grade A manipulator. There was always a reason for something else and it was never me. So, you know, that stuff doesn't work anymore. And knowing that regardless, I am powerless over people, places, things, and situations. I do a lot of the acceptance prayer, realizing that acceptance is the answer to all my problems today, because I can't control people, places, things, and situations. I've said ad nauseum that, you know, we would only have to do the steps once if we lived in a vacuum, but we don't. We have to interact with people on a daily basis. So I do have to keep working those steps. I do have to call myself out on stuff. And that's the difference, is before I really didn't have anything in my life except for food. And that's so sad. But instead of grieving about the past, I can, the only way I, you know, they say that we don't wish to shut the door on the past. I don't shut the door. I use it as a gauge for how far I've come. And I choose to live a life of integrity now. And I'm so incredibly grateful for these steps. It was only through this program. I did come because my food was out of control. I came for that vanity of losing the weight because I knew this was the last house on the block. But more than the vanity, I got that sanity. And I like who I am now. I have interests. I have confidence in me. I like me. And I choose to live a very varied, full life. And I try things that I never would have tried before. That's the other thing, is that I would have said that I was a pretty fearless person before. I skydived and bungee jumped and ziplined and parasailed and done things like that. But when I looked at it through working the 12 steps, I was ruled by fear, fear of rejection, fear of everything, and mostly fear of not being accepted because I felt like an outsider. And now I don't have those fears as much. It doesn't mean I don't have fears, but I know how to work the 12 steps around it so that I don't live my life in fear anymore. Let's see, anything else? I think that's it. So I appreciate this opportunity to share my story. I've shared it before. Sorry to some of you who've heard me many, many times, but I'm so appreciative of these meetings, and it's so nice to hear from all of you. And I will never leave this program. I absolutely love it. It has saved my life, and it's given me a life. It's given me, I was going to tell you really quickly about making amends to my kids. So when I did make my amends to my kids, I, told them how, I was mean and not present sometimes and lashed out at them. And I apologized. And my oldest son said, "It's okay, Mom." I said, "No, it's not okay, but you can forgive me if you want." And it was nice then, when I worked the steps and I apologized to my family, there's that ripple effect, because now we all treat one another with that respect and apologize. And I it's a trickle down theory, because they do it too. And it's lovely. So these really are, the 12 steps are a blueprint for living. And this program is just, it's warm and cozy to me. And it really does fill that God-sized void in my life. And now I'm full. So and with that, I'm going to say thank you, and I pass.
Okay. Thank you, Susan, for your pitch and for being of service. It is now time for question and answers until 10:55. The floor is open. Rhiannon, compulsive overeater, I'll ask the first question. So, surprising, isn't it? My question, Susan, so I struggle a ton with that letting go of control and turning over to my higher power, and not being just such a little brat. How did you transition from brat to woman of faith?
Thank you for your question, Rhiannon. And first of all, it was important to realize that I really didn't have the control anyway. I was just being that brat wanting the control of people, places, things, and situations. And when I could see my part, why did I want that control? Because of pride, because of, security. Security is a big thing. I need you to behave this way because it makes me feel safe. Well, I don't want to rely on somebody else to make me feel safe. I would rather give that over to my higher power and say, okay, God, just for today, I'm going to give that over to you. And please relieve me from this obsession with trying to control so-and-so and how they are doing such and such. And lo and behold, if I am not relieved by that obsession. So a lot of prayers, and sometimes it doesn't come right away. I've had to do, 2 weeks of the resentment prayer. I had one person that just really chapped my hide and for probably 3 or 4 years. And I did the resentment prayer for well over a month, and it's been 7 years, and I wish this person only love. And I have an incredible relationship with this person where, I mean, it's not someone I'm in contact with all the time, but I've been completely relieved of this resentment. So, I mean, it's not odd, it's God. So just a lot of working the steps and seeing what my part is, you know, what am I after? Because honestly, it's my dishonesty, thinking that I want them to adhere to my script. And so seeing that part, look you in the face, do I want to sit there and have that dis-ease because I want that control? Or do I want to have some peace and harmony in my life? Well, I want that peace and harmony. So once you do it a couple of times, it gets better and better. But I mean, it still, you know, stuff still comes up. So a lot of prayers to God, God, please relieve me of this obsession with so-and-so and let me get over this resentment. And a lot of 12 steps or a lot of 10 steps. Does that answer? Sort of.
Yes, that was amazing. Thank you.
I'm Natalie, compulsive overeater. Thank you, Susan. And I'm just going to ask you a sponsoring question. So for me, sometimes, you know, a lot of times people come to the program and the spiritual higher power part is difficult for people sometimes. And it was for me because it felt like, especially from the big book, oh, it's this Christian God that I grew up with that I didn't believe in. How do you help people find a higher power that works for them? Do you give them yours? I'm assuming you don't, but you know what I'm asking.
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's a hard one. I know that when I speak at meetings and there's a lot of newcomers, I usually will talk about the insanity around the food because I don't want to scare them off about the higher power. I do share, you know, my personal feelings around, you know, what God has done for me, my God. And God can be the ocean. God can be whatever. Sometimes it's a relationship within the group. You know, so I know that people do struggle with a God of the understanding. And I certainly did. The God that I had as a child was, vindictive and punishing, and that's definitely not my higher power now. So I tell people, whatever is your higher power, whether it's the sun, you know, the feeling of, you know, petals or whatever it is, if you can help, you know, if you can just think about something like that, you know, does that make sense? So just whatever works for the person.
Hi, Susan, it's Jennifer. I'm a compulsive overeater. I know you've been in the program for many years and wondering over like the last, I don't know, 5 or 7 years, do you have ups and downs? And I mean, of course, we all have ups and downs, but I mean, more specifically with the food and the program, and how do you weather those? Or if you don't, how do you think you kind of maintain that steadiness?
Good question, Jennifer. And I do want to share that the first person I ever saw in my first OA meeting was Jennifer. And I will never forget when I saw her with her beautiful blonde hair and just, you know, I just remember that so clearly.
Before I cut it all off, but yeah.
Yeah, it's still beautiful and blonde. Anyway, but I digress. So anyway, yes, I do have ups and downs. Food doesn't call to me, and I don't know if it's it isn't my new food plan. Like I said, the road does narrow. I've had to cut out things because I'm a compulsive overeater and a liar and a cheater, and I will try and manipulate to get what I want when I want it. So I didn't do sugar. I didn't, you know, do all these things, but I would make these little energy balls that were all the food in there was like abstinent food, but I can't eat that stuff. I mean, so that's the manipulation, you know, to get what I want when I want it, because that is the crux of my problem. So whether it's if for me to be 90 pounds or for me to eat a pizza, I want what I want when I want it. And so I've had to really, you know, talk to God about that and be honest. And there definitely have been ups and downs with food and with life. I mean, life on life's terms with the pandemic, and I had a new job, and it's, things are scary, but working the 12 steps and really keeping my higher power close has what is what's got me through. But I've definitely, you know, worse than any food or anything is that spiritual disconnect. That is the most painful pain I've ever felt. And I've had things, you know, people die in my life where I've felt abandoned. And I've really had to latch onto my higher power for that. And that's gotten me through. And knowing that no matter what, I'm never going to leave this program, never going to leave this program. That is so incredibly comforting to me. It's not a ball and chain. It's like a parent. It's my parent. It will never leave me. So I hope that answers your question.
Hi, I'm Amy, compulsive overeater. Susan, thank you for leading. Do you have an abstinence and a food plan, or is abstinence your food plan? How does that work for you? And what is your abstinence? Is it very structured? Is it, people say, worn like a loose robe, something like that?
You know, it's a weird thing. I'm abstinent against sugar and white flour. Those are the things, no matter what. But my food plan is what I eat to maintain my abstinence. So it's like the support. I eat 3 meals a day and a snack if I'm having a hard workout. And that works for me. And so I think my food plan is what supports me to keep my abstinence. And part of my abstinence is not counting calories, because that gets me all crazy. It's the numbers. I weigh and measure my food, but I cannot count calories. And it's weird. It's honestly the grace of God that I don't seem to understand that anymore, the counting calories. I used to know calories of everything. And now it's like, oh, I don't know. And so, I mean, I'm relieved of that. Yeah. And I do weigh myself once a month.
All right. Thank you again, Susan. That was just so amazing. Thank you for being a service and being willing to share all of that with us.